Now, Dr. Parazynski has made two space flights aboard the space shuttle. In 1994, he performed experiments in the atmospheric laboratory for applications and science during a 10-day mission aboard the space shuttle. And during the mission, he collected data on atmospheric and environmental change, which has been used this year by some of our Year 9 students in their studies. Last month, he visited the Russian space station and served as flight engineer and rendezvous navigator for the shuttle, and he made a 5-hour spacewalk. Now, he attended high school in a number of countries, Lebanon, Iran, and Greece among them. He has degrees in biology and medicine. He completed 22 months in emergency medicine in Colorado before being selected for astronaut training in 1992. He has been the recipient of many honours, many awards. He was a Rhodes Scholarship finalist. He's earned the National Institutes of Health Award in Cancer Biology and was ranked in the top 10 luge competitors in the US during the 1988 Winter Olympic Trials and served as an Olympic team coach for the Philippines during those 1988 Winter Olympics. See, he's a man of many talents then. Dr. Parazynski has circled the globe 344 times on his two shuttle flights. This trip by plane, it's been a little slower than that, but it brings the total to 345 times that he has circled the globe. We really are delighted to welcome him today. He has been making visits around Australia. He came to Melbourne late last night. This is the only school in Victoria he is visiting, and he leaves for Houston later today. So let's welcome Dr. Parazynski.
Thank you very much for that warm welcome. It's fantastic to be here in Melbourne. It's a beautiful city. It's a beautiful country, as has been mentioned. I've traveled around the world many, many times, and I've seen your beautiful country from space, but this is the first time I've actually been on the ground, and I hope to visit many times again in the future. Our mission was designed to go ahead and pick up Dr. Michael Foal, who had been up on the Mir space station for 4.5 months, and also deliver another astronaut, physician Dr. David Wolf, to the station. As you know, Andy Thomas, one of Australia's finest, will be on his way up to the Mir space station in January for a 4-month mission. We had a crew of 8 people on our flight. This is Russian cosmonaut Vladimir Titov. Here I am on the morning of launch, really gung-ho to go fly in space. We had a French general with us, Jean-Luc Chrétien, and Wendy Lawrence, a naval commander, helicopter pilot. And here's Dave Wolf, who's actually up in space as we speak, orbiting the Earth. And I'm sure you have some great questions for me, so let's start with some. Who's got a question? Yes. When's the next mission that I'll be going on? Well, unfortunately, once you fly, you're kind of at the end of the line. So I've had my fun, and now it's time for me to help other astronauts prepare for their flights. So it'll be about 2 years until my next mission. Other questions? Yes. When we're doing the tour of Mir, is that what you're saying? The question is, did I ever feel dizzy when we're doing the aerobatic, call them aileron rolls, during our tour of Mir? Now, actually, what's really amazing about being in space is that you can do all sorts of aerobatics. You can do flips and spins and all sorts of amazing maneuvers, and you don't feel sick or nauseated at all. The exception is the first couple of days of space flight. Some people, because of being in zero gravity, it's such a foreign environment, they do have what's called space motion sickness. And fortunately, it's self-limited. Usually the following morning it's gone. But people do get a little bit nauseated and occasionally throw up. If you're sitting upside down up in space, does the blood ever rush to your head? And actually, the amazing concept of being in space is there really is no up or down or left or right or forward or back. In fact, you can flip upside down, and this could be the roof in space if I wanted it to be, or that could be the roof. It's all what you tell your mind you'd like it to be. There is no real gravity vector up in space, so you don't have any blood rushing up to your head. Talking a little bit about the physiology, though, when we first go up into space, you don't have gravity anymore. So the blood and the tissue fluids that kind of exist in your lower body here on Earth, they come up into your central circulation, if you will. And people get really puffy faces, runny noses, and mild headaches the first couple of days, but that goes away. Right before the launch, do you ever feel like jumping out and saying, no way, I don't want to do this, I'm too scared? Actually, no, it didn't cross our mind, although we did joke about it a little bit. We were thinking, well, what if we said right now, you know, let me out. People are always listening to those loops, and I'm not sure exactly what they would do, but it would be a panic situation, I'm sure. But no, we trained for years to go do this. We fully understand the risks involved, but we believe in the benefits, and we believe those benefits far outweigh the risk. So we don't think about that very much, and in fact, we're not nervous at all, which might surprise you. But you're so focused on the job that you have at hand. You've got to look at your displays. You've got to fly the vehicle, and so on launch, you don't think about those things. However, when you watch your mates go fly into space, that's another thing. You know, I get goosebumps when I watch other people go do it. Yes. How did I change from medicine to astronautics? Actually, I've always wanted to be an astronaut. In fact, since I could walk and talk, I've wanted to be an astronaut. And so I've kind of had that dream, that goal in the back of my mind all along. When I was in medical school, I did research in space physiology, and that was kind of my avenue for pursuing it. But just to give you an idea of the kinds of people that go into space, it's not just physicians, it's not just test pilots, but it's computer engineers, chemical engineers, astrophysicists, astronomers, geologists, all sorts of different scientific disciplines that apply to space. So whatever you're interested in, if it is in science, I'm sure it's relevant to the space program. And we have people from all those fields working with us. Yes? What types of training do we do? Well, it's very exciting training. We're very lucky that no day repeats itself. We do all sorts of really neat things. For example, for spacewalk training, we get in a huge pool in our spacesuits, and it's a neutrally buoyant environment, so it's similar but not exactly identical to being in space. And we perform our entire spacewalk timeline in the pool. We fly supersonic jet trainer aircraft for flying proficiency. We are in the simulators quite often, training different malfunctions for launch and orbit and entry simulations. We study different scientific payloads. So we travel around the country and occasionally around the world to go to the investigators' laboratories and learn about their science so that we can perform it on orbit. So lots of different things. What happens during a cabin depressurization? Actually, there were three crew members aboard the Mir station at that time. And what really happened, a Progress resupply ship careened into the hull of the Spectre module and caused a leak. And they heard the thud, and then they felt in their ears a drop in pressure. I don't know if you've experienced that in a plane or not, but as you come on down, you have an ear block, and that's exactly what they felt. They knew that there was a cabin depressurization, and they sort of suspected where it was. So what they did is they rushed to the hatch of that damaged module. They cut all the cables and all the ducting that fed into that chamber and put the hatch on the doorway there. And they did all this within 10 minutes. It was really a great save. Those guys, there's a lot in the press early on blaming the crew for crew error, but actually they were real heroes. They saved the entire space station doing that. How many years of training and schooling is required before becoming an astronaut? Well, first let me say that there are two different types of astronauts. There are mission specialist astronauts like myself who are scientists. We perform spacewalks and fly the robotic arm and perform scientific duties. And then there are pilot type astronauts who are military fighter test pilots, different paths to the same job. For mission specialists, typically you need an advanced degree like a medical degree or a PhD and several years of relevant experience. For a pilot-type astronaut, you need about 1,500 hours of jet time and to be a graduate of test pilot school. But again, I guess the bottom line is you just need a strong background in an area that's relevant to space exploration. We're talking about space tourism. Would people in the future be required to go through all of that training? And the answer is no. I'm not sure exactly when that's going to happen. I think in probably the next 15 to 20 years there will be ways for tourists to go up into space and perhaps even spend a few days up on orbit on a space station, kind of a space hotel. And in those types of trips, I don't think much training would be required other than just safety training. Of course, the reason we go into space now is to conduct scientific research and other operations, and a lot of training is required to do that. How often do we have space shuttle missions? Is that typically every 6 weeks or so, there's a launch. And the next launch actually will be Andy Thomas's flight in late January, so coming up very soon. Yes. How does it really feel to float around up in space? It's just the most magical sensation you can possibly imagine. It's the only earthbound parallel I can draw is maybe being on the top of a pool on a float and just floating there completely relaxed. But it's effortless to work up in space. You know, when we move about here, we have to resist the force of gravity to do everything that we want to do. To walk from here to there, I have to use lots of different muscles, and it's work. But in space, you can just push off with your fingertips from here, and I could fly like Superman up to the ceiling back there. It's just an incredible thing. And then when you couple that with looking out the window and seeing an entire continent in a single glance, you know, for example, your beautiful country here, you can see all of Australia just in a single view. It's great. You would like it. Is aging slower in space? That's a really good question, and I assume you're asking about relativistic aging, and we don't get anywhere close to the speed of light in our travel. We're going very, very fast. We're going way above the speed limit here in Australia, but nowhere near the type of speeds that I think you're implying. So we come back pretty much the same age we left. When do I think the first Mars mission will take place? And I'm going on the current plan, which is around the year 2018. We'll have the first human exploration of Mars. In the coming years, we're going to have the International Space Station assembled on orbit, which is something that I'll certainly take part in. And soon thereafter, we're going to be going back to the moon to test out life support systems and other preparatory work for going to Mars. The reason we want to go back to the moon is because it's a 3-day trip back home. Going to Mars, it's anywhere from 3 months to 12 months just to get there, and the same amount of time to come back home. So a lot of exciting things in the next 20 years in space. How do they select crews? How do they assemble crews together? That's actually kind of a mystery to all of us, but I think that they do look at the personalities involved, as well as just the skill mix of people on board the flight to select the best people for those missions. So they pick people who have a background in athletics to do spacewalks, and you know, if it's a material science research flight, they'll pick material scientists to go do those flights. It all depends. Mir is the only space station on orbit right now. That is correct. Yes, I've been referring to it as the International Space Station, and it's actually a huge international cooperative effort between the United States, Russia, the Canadians, the European Space Agency, the Japanese, Even Brazil now has joined in. And I've been saying this quite often on my trip here, but I certainly hope that Australia joins us in the coming years. Australia has a strong history in space exploration, not only in human exploration with Paul Scully Powers and Andy Thomas, but you know, you've got the Canberra tracking station. You have lots of different satellite technologies and space technologies that are being developed here. So we hope to get Australia online with International Space Station and of course, going on to Mars with us. Yes, ma'am.